on Straight Talk Africa, a reflection on the legacy of Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi, who served as the second and longest president of the Republic of Kenya. That conversation is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali, and today we are discussing the legacy of Daniel Arap Moi. Kenya's longest-serving president, Daniel Arap Moi, was laid to rest at his Kabarak home in the Rift Valley region. President Moi, who died at age 95, oversaw a period of relative stability, but left behind a mixed legacy of corruption and torture of his opponents. My colleague, Paul Ndiho, has more.
Kenya's former president, Daniel Arap Moi, was buried at his Rift Valley estate last week, flown via military helicopter from Nairobi and transferred by gun carriage to a large tent for a religious service.
I can truly say that I'm here to say kwaheri to a man I considered my father, my mentor, my teacher, and to say that truly we shall miss him.
It was here where Moi spent his retirement, and Deputy President William Ruto told mourners that Kenya's longest-serving president had worked to ensure that the Rift Valley region was home to all of Kenya's 45 ethnic communities.
This great Rift Valley where Moi began, we are going to be steadfast and firm in ensuring that our great country shall continue to be knit together.
He called it the Valley of Peace, but the Rift Valley has not always been peaceful. Tribal clashes broke out there around the elections in 1992 and in 1997, as Moi's Kalenjin tribe sought to kick out opposition supporters, who they perceived as outsiders because they settled there after the independence from Britain in 1963. Violence flared again after the 2007 presidential election campaign, with Ruto himself accused of being behind it. He was among those charged at the International Criminal Court, though the charges were later dropped. Moi, who succeeded independence leader Jomo Kenyatta in 1978, is credited with keeping Kenya relatively stable, but criticized for a legacy of corruption and torture of opponents.
We celebrated Nyayo's life because it was a rich life. It touched so many people in the right ways. I said yesterday, me, we had a history with him. Love, hate. We eventually met, and we met here.
He oversaw massive scandals such as the Golden Bug, which led to the loss of at least $1 billion in central bank money, via compensation payments for bogus gold and diamond exports. Kenyan taxpayers are still counting the cost. The economy also stagnated under Moi, leaving millions mired in poverty. After an attempted coup in 1982, diplomats say he was transformed from a cautious, insecure leader into a tough autocrat. He rewrote the constitution to legalize the de facto one-party rule, which continued until 1991, when, under international pressure, Moi restored multi-party politics. His government also set up interrogation chambers in the basement of a government building in central Nairobi, where thousands of activists, students, and academics were held without charge. The government of Kenya accorded Moi a state funeral. Officers from the Kenyan Navy fired a 19-gun salute in tribute to Moi before his body was lowered into a grave next to his wife, who died in 2004. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining me today in our Washington studio is my colleague Esther Githui Ewart, anchor of the Voice of America's daily news show, Africa 54. And from our studio in New York, I am joined by David Onserio Monda, Professor of Political Science at the City University of New York. Well, Esther and Monda, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka, for having me.
You're most welcome.
Thank you for having us, Shaka.
You're most welcome, David. Let me come to you immediately, Esther. Mm-hmm. You are a gallant Kenyan.
How so?
You pretty much had the privilege of growing up under President Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi.
That's very correct. I did not know President Jomo Kenyatta, the founding father. He passed away when I was very little. To understand what the president meant or the presidency. Yes, indeed, I grew up under President Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi. I went to school. I was a beneficiary of those who benefited from his free school milk. And so we loved those days. We had two days that we used to get free milk at school. And I remember most of us saying, we're so lucky we don't have to run back home. You know, that's why Kenyans run fast, because you have to do like 3-4 times, go to school in the morning, go back for lunch, go back to school. So I didn't have to do 3 miles going back to the village to get some lunch from mom. And sometimes maybe mom wouldn't even be there. So we would carry the leftover from the previous night's meal, or even, you know, some slices of bread, because there was free milk. So we did enjoy the milk, I have to tell you the truth. We enjoyed it. When I went to school, all I knew is President Moi from primary school to secondary school. I also worked in the Kenya Broadcasting Corporation when Moi was the president. And all the news started with His Excellency, President Daniel Arap Moi.
You know, Esther, when I first met and interviewed him at State House Nairobi in 1999. During the interview, he told me that he was the education president. You mentioned the milk.
Yes.
During the time that you were at school.
Yes.
Was he right?
There was a reason for that. A lot of kids could not go to school. There was school fees at the time. There was uniform, and some parents couldn't afford the uniform. They couldn't afford some of the fees that had to be paid, and so President Moi wanted to attract children to go back to school. And indeed, especially those 2 days of the week that we had the free milk, the classes were full. Children would come to school. And it was a good incentive. People may have politicized this, but I think as a child, that's what I remember, that there was no way I would be sick on Tuesdays or Thursdays. I had to go to school because there was free milk. And so a lot of children went to school. A lot of parents wanted their kids to go to school. And when kids went back home and they could read and write, parents felt, wow, we have to do something to keep our children in school. And maybe that's why we are here today, Shaka.
Very interesting. What about you, David?
Yes, so very interesting memories about, President Moi and his legacy. I remember growing up when Esther Githui was the anchor of Kenya Broadcasting Corporation. I believe at that time we had one, probably two main stations. And every evening, the news always started with His Excellency the President Daniel Arap Moi. And a very interesting narrative. You know, President Moi did a lot in terms of social programs, in terms of expanding education, in terms of really providing avenues for some of the more marginalized communities, which under President Kenyatta had been forgotten. Because during the Kenyatta years, there was this national perception that only Central Kenya, which is the region where President Kenyatta was from, was benefiting from the largesse of the state, benefiting from the government. So Moi's era tended to usher in an era when some of the more marginalized, smaller ethnic groups felt that they could come into the national narrative, because Moi himself was from one of those smaller ethnic groups. But I think also, by and large, his reforms in terms of the education really expanded the field of education. And also in relation to some of the regional issues around Uganda, around South Sudan. He really did a lot in terms of diplomacy and in terms of regional integration. So in terms of his positives, you know, I think those are the things I really remember him for. But I also remember him as being a no-nonsense president in terms of detaining opponents without due process, and also for some of the, you know, more mega scandals in terms of misappropriation of public funds. So he was a very, you know, he does really leave us a very mixed narrative in terms of exactly how we should remember him.
So if you were to be very brief, bright and bold and to the point, what would you say that in your view he would be best remembered for?
The long period of stability in the country, and also for leaving the country in 2002 without clinging to power, which is a bad habit that many leaders in Africa have. So he quit when the people said he had to go, and also he really provided long period of stability, you know, with social benefits and a lot of integration of more marginalized groups in Kenya.
It is very interesting that you happen to be a professor of political science, and of course you know as well as I do that President Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi was actually considered to be the president of politics. Was he?
I think very much so you could consider him the professor of politics. He was very good at keeping his opponents guessing. You know, one example I would give was you find ever since he got into power in 78, he always kept changing his vice presidents. And he always made sure the vice president was always from the largest ethnic group in central Kenya, the Kikuyu community. He shifted from Mwai Kibaki, Josphat Karanja, to Saitoti. So he was constantly playing these political cards. And he could play dirty when he had to play dirty. When in 1992, there was this multi-party wave which had swept a lot of African presidents from office, he was very cunning in ensuring that the opposition was divided, such that ultimately he was able to retain power after the 1992 elections and also to win another set of elections in 1997. But a lot of those political machinations came at the expense of the economy, because to prop that political machine, there was a lot of cronyism, and that really took a lot of state resources to keep all these political allies in place and loyal. So you had to use a lot of state resources to maintain that. And that really had a negative effect on the economy.
I see.
So, well, Shaka, you were talking about what we remember him for. One of the things I would say I will remember President Moi for, he was a no-nonsense president. The way we see Kenya now, with a lot of people coming in and out of the country, President Moi was very protective of Kenyan borders. People didn't just walk in and out, just like nobody will just walk in your house and out of your house without the, you know, your invitation, or without you asking, why are you here? What do you need? So he was very protective of that. He also was very proud of protecting Kenyans. He wanted Kenyans to be proud of their identity. Mm. That was one of the things, and he really stressed. And also he had the motto of peace, love, and unity, meaning we were supposed to love each other. We were supposed to, you know, be united as Kenyans. And those were things that he was really, we would remember him for, and strengthening the education system in Kenya. Education was key for him. You would see President Moi in so many schools. He would be traversing the country. He also liked to meet the common people, the common mwananchi, as they say in Swahili. And he would have nice conversations. He would get off the motorcade, you know, with the presidency, because Moi was the presidency was Moi. But he would get off on the highways, go buy some groceries on the side of the stores, and he would also make statements to the country, something that he wanted people to know, that he may not have made it on a camera or on TV out there. He would say it on the spot right there. And those were some of the headlines we remember of the CAF remarks. Moi would have an English speech but the gist of his speech would only be known when he says, now, in Swahili, and he would say the stuff in Swahili. That's when you would know what's really, what he wants to get off his chest. That
now,
was Moi.
Now, Esther, the norm is usually for a professor to probably have earned a PhD degree.
To have written a dissertation,
a thesis, to have published books and what have you, and to have been senior in his own faculty. Why do you think President Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi was in fact considered to be the professor of politics in Kenya?
I have to remind you,
including Shark, in fact some professors themselves, a man like Professor Peter Anyang' Nyong'o.
There is something we say, you can be book smart, but you can be born with certain intelligence. Moi was born with that kind of intelligence. He would look at people, he would kind of perceive their thoughts, he knew which way Kenyans are going, what are they complaining about. He had a way with politics. He didn't have to be book smart. He was very smart. He already had it in him, let me put it that way. And you've seen people like that who are very book smart, but out there on the street, they are something else. So I would say he understood the people of Kenya. He understood the politics of Kenya. Remember, he took over because the founding president died. You know, there was no illness or anything. President Kenyatta, Jomo Kenyatta, was in Mombasa where he slept, and, you know, we were, the announcement was he has passed away. So there was no preparation there. And I think that was a big challenge for him. He had to, it was a wake-up call. How do I steer the country as the vice president? He was going to ascend to power. How do I consolidate this power in this country? What are people thinking? It was a big challenge. But I tell you what, he didn't have to have the book smart education. He had it in him on how he had to handle the country. And he was credited for putting the country together at that time. There were many other times we could talk about, including the 1998 bombing of the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam around that time, where Moi united Kenyans. That people cannot forget. We have to credit him for what was good. And yes, indeed, he did crush on his opponents, political opponents. And we know that. You talked about it in your introduction, the torture, the corruption. There were all those things. So President Moi, like it or not, he had his good and he also had his bad. So he has critics and he has those who remember him for great things.
He was mortal.
Yes,
a fire. He definitely was not immortal.
Yes, he was, yeah.
Now, David, some pundits suggest that great presidents, or good leaders for that matter, are measured in terms of how they reflect on being conscious, character, courage, and country. How would you assess the presidency of President Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi based on these three important values? Four important values, rather. Important four C's.
I think, Shaka, I would again say there's a mixed bag in relation to that. In terms of character, in terms of content, I think he was a very resilient man. President Moi was very resilient. If you go through the history in the 50s and the 60s, pre-independence, when he went to the LegCo, to the Lancaster House negotiations, and then even eventually when he was nominated to become the vice president, he had to go through a lot of patience. And even until 1978, when he became the vice president, there was a lot of movements to undermine him. So he had to be very patient. And I think that really shows a lot of character. But I think I must also say, I was really affected personally by, you know, some of the excesses of the regime. I remember the late Professor Mkangi, Katama Mkangi. You know, he was detained by the government and he died. You know, he eventually died, still struggling. We have Ngugi Wa Thiong'o, who's out here in University of California, Irvine, who for many years couldn't teach at the university. You know, we had Korwa Adar, you know, who went into exile in South Africa. So as much as we honor and, you know, we respect the legacy and his character, but there's also other darker elements of his character in terms of his intolerance for critics. And I think any good leader has to be comfortable enough to take criticism because nobody's perfect. And anytime a lot of these critics got killed, got executed, I think it really created a scar on the country. And I think this is one of the big, big blights, one of the big challenges in terms of how we perceive of the Moi presidency and ultimately how he'll be remembered. Yes, he did a lot of good, but he also did a lot of damage to the country in other respects, in particular to human rights and in relation to management of the economy. There were a lot of areas where he was wanting.
Monda, if you were to talk to me from the deepest bitter part of the bottom of your Kenyan heart and soul, what would you say, perhaps, was his single most regrettable decision during his presidency?
I think one would be clamping down on critics, particularly after the 1982 coup attempt, the coup d'etat. Kenya was declared a de jure one-party state. A lot of opposition figures, Raila Odinga, Jaramogi Odinga, were put under house arrest. Raila Odinga was detained. Any of his critics were detained. And this really created a culture, I remember growing up, of fear. When my parents would be very careful to inform me when I went to school, you know, you couldn't say anything against the government because it almost became like a police state. Everyone was very scared. When you watch the Voice of Kenya or the Kenya Broadcasting Corporation news, nobody really believed that that was really news. During the multi-party era, a lot of Kenyans would tune into foreign stations to actually know what was going on in their country, because a lot of what was coming from the state media was problematic. So I think in relation to that, that was one of the most regrettable elements in terms of clamping down on the freedom of speech and the human rights abuses, I think was one of the most negative elements of his presidency.
Very interesting. Esther, I was told by one of his former very senior aides, the late now Simeon Nyachae, he told me that one of President Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi's greatest strength was that he was underestimated by both his adversaries and allies. Do you agree?
Well, yes, because I think coming into the presidency after the founding father of Kenya died suddenly, that posed a big challenge to him. He wasn't sure whether they were going to support him, those who were allied to the late president, those who came from his community. They wielded a lot of power. Much as I wasn't there then, I read the stuff and I see that he had to consolidate his power. He had to look around and see who is with me and who is against me. And that formed his basis of being a tough president to start with. And as Monda pointed out, after the coup, then he even became tougher. He had to make sure he was the president and all Kenyans had to know there was a president. I guess if, you know, I was little then, I still would have known there was a president, and it meant power in Kenya comes from a place called State House. And so we grew up knowing there was President Moi, and we feared him. But also, as we got to the milk program, we kind of also liked him. So we didn't really know how it was going. But I have to tell you, he was a tough president. He also had a sense of humor as well. He also had a way of getting around his enemies and getting them into his own camp. And Monda can tell you a couple of people that were against him during his presidency, as he ascended, as he consolidated his power, that he also was able to reach out to some of his enemies. And he would say, you know, enemies are not forever.
He was a master, some would say.
He was a master of politics.
Developing political patronage.
Yes, he did have that in him. He knew how to go about it. He would study people, like I told you before. He was smart in a very different way.
Very interesting. David It was said, of course, that he was, quote unquote, a passing cloud. What did that mean? And when did that perception end?
So I think this was a term that is attributed to our former Attorney General, the Charles Njonjo, and the idea was that President Moi, after 1978, when he took over power from being vice president to president, there was this perception that he was a placeholder, that ultimately the foreign powers, the British and the Americans, they had another candidate, a stronger candidate, someone who was better educated, someone who was a better speaker, someone who they perceived to be a stronger leader, and that Moi would be in power for 2, 3, maybe 4 years, and eventually would leave. And ultimately, that short passing cloud ended up being an enduring cloud, which stayed for a long, long, long period, over close to a quarter century. But I also must say, Shaka, that a lot of what Moi did, some of his excesses, you know, you can't really just blame the president himself. The coinage of the passing cloud was done by Charles Njonjo. And a lot of the challenges of the government, a lot of the laws that allowed for the detention, a lot of the executions, a lot of these were done by allies of the president, by people very close to the president. And there was a whole network of sycophancy around him. So it's very difficult to appropriate blame and blame just one individual, because it was a whole system that ultimately ended up creating some of the challenges that Moi is remembered negatively for. So this, the issue of the passing cloud is definitely attributed to Charles Njonjo, but, you know, as Esther has mentioned, President Moi became very canny, very smart, very Machiavellian in terms of manipulating, you know, the political space and ensuring that he wasn't a passing cloud, that he not only consolidated his rule, but he handed over power eventually to the current president, Kenyatta, who's the son of the first president. So ultimately, in the long term, he won by consolidating his power and handing over to a person that he wanted.
Well, in fact, he did not hand over power to Uhuru Kenyatta. Rather, he handed over power to Emilio Mwai Kibaki.
Yes. Very correct. So ultimately, he wanted Uhuru Kenyatta to be president, and that didn't happen in the election of 2002. But his long-term vision of having Uhuru Kenyatta, who was the son of the first president in power, became an actuality after Mwai Kibaki left office. So it's a very interesting legacy in relation to that also.
You talk about how the West, for example, supported the possibility of a presidency of Charles Mugani Njonjo. Some people, in fact, used to refer to him as the Duke of Kabeteshire. What about some reports suggesting that the Americans had their boy, and that was Dr. Njoroge Mungai, a man who had gotten his MD from Stanford University in California, and that the British, of course, had their money on Mr. Njonjo?
Yes, so this is an interesting analogy. So the Americans had their candidate in Njoroge Mungai, and the British preferred Charles Njonjo, who's almost turning 100, who recently turned 100, so he's still kicking on. It's very interesting, that sort of element of the geopolitics around that. But what I think the president, President Moi, was able to do was to keep a lot of the foreign powers guessing. And politically, he was very astute, particularly during the Cold War, of playing the Soviet bloc against the West and, you know, playing both sides against each other, and also cutting opponents down to size. When Charles Njonjo was really being fronted by the British, Moi cut down his wings and eventually kicked him out of the political arena, ultimately bringing in Robert Ouko. And when Robert Ouko became the former foreign minister, when Robert Ouko became a threat to to Moi and his power, he disappeared under very unfamiliar circumstances, which have still to date not been fully disclosed. So he was very politically savvy, and very politically savvy not only at manipulating external powers, but also the domestic arena in terms of those lieutenants within his regime who were, eyeing power, eyeing the political space to take over from him.
Well, time, of course, is not our best ally. And for that, you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment. So please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
It's about more than just sitting here and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure their voices are heard.
Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. Every week, connect with our experts. You can ask them your questions and get their advice. Join me, Lino Hmudu, in Washington on Healthy Living, your new health program, right here on Voice of America.
Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook. You can watch our show there and leave a comment. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, education has always formed bridges between the U.S. and Africa. A number of African leaders were educated on American soil, and now young African Americans are visiting the continent to discover their heritage. The education bond between the U.S. and the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
And today we are talking about the legacy of Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi. And I am joined here in Washington by my colleague Esther Githui Ewart, anchor of the VOA Daily News Show, Africa 54. And from New York, I am joined by David Onserio Monda, Professor of Political Science at the City University of New York. Well, Esther and Monda, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
You're very welcome, Shaka.
Thank you very much. It's always
Thank
a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. It's always a pleasure interacting with you. Now, Esther, during the break, we were talking about the Moi before the coup.
Yes.
A lot of foreign pundits regard him as the insecure.
So they thought.
And unsure at the time. And yes. Yet this was a man, by the way,
yes,
according to the man who first held the vice presidency of the Republic of Kenya, a man called Jaramogi Oginga Odinga, who also happens to be the father of Raila Odinga,
yes,
former Kenyan Prime Minister, and the author of a controversial and classic book, yes, Not Yet Uhuru.
Not Yet Freedom, right?
And the man who, yeah, when he was vice president, mm-hmm, of President Jomo Kenyatta, for some reason he seems to have forgotten that he was number two, and basically tried to almost behave really as a co-president. He once looked at Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi and said of him that he was as tall as a giraffe. And for that, he saw very, very far.
Yes, indeed. The giraffes eat the top layer. They also see very far. I like the giraffe too.
Exactly. So, what did he mean by that? Was he talking about Mr. Moi being very visionary, perhaps?
Of course, of course. I mean, he could see far. He could read people's minds, if you like, political minds. He knew who was trying to get around him, who he knew what he needed to be to consolidate his power, as we said before. And so, yes, I mean, it was a good, it was such a great analogy to draw, to think about him being a giraffe. You know, the giraffes are tall, they see very far, they eat the top layer, and Moi was such. He was tall in his way of thinking. He built an institution around his presidency. And even in meetings, whether there was any public meeting, not just for cabinet ministers, they would all be there. And one of the surprises would be he might want to fire a cabinet minister. Or if he mentioned your ministry and you didn't stand up, or a permanent secretary, he would be like, where is this guy? I mean, I can tell you, you might as well fire yourself because you're fired. So, yes, that was President Moi. President Moi, who also made sure that Voice of Kenya then and KBC, which became Kenya Broadcasting Corporation, you know, it was just a change of name from Voice of Kenya to KBC. He made sure it was an institution that was directed by his presidency. The kind of news that we read was about the presidency. We had 15 minutes of radio news, and much of that would be about President Daniel Arap Moi did this, did that. The only time I remember that the news changed was, or I had news changed, was when the 1998 bombing, that we had the news start with the bombing of the U.S. Embassy in Kenya and how many Kenyans died.
Otherwise,
everything else was about President Moi, where he went. Yes.
It was public relations.
And it was always His Excellency. We didn't have a Wang. No Daniel. It was President Daniel Arap Moi. Today said ABCD. And we also had our surprises. Anytime we saw the presidential press unit, you know Lin Jiro, he headed the presidential press unit. He was still his press secretary to his death. So the newsroom had an office of the presidential press unit. So we worked in the larger newsroom of Kenya Broadcasting Corporation. But when we saw the presidential press unit guys come in, we knew whatever we are working on, it may not go on air. And indeed, most of the times it would be the president was going to fire a cabinet secretary, a minister or a permanent secretary, somebody in power. And that means your news, Shaka, would be tossed aside. This is the news bulletin. They
how
were
often,
fired
how
at
often,
1 o'clock.
For example, did you have the dubious privilege of being the presenter of
Oh
that?
Boy, I did have some. And it was tons of pages. And you really had to read between the lines because there was no preparation. It was breaking news. And the funny part about this is the cabinet ministers or the ministers who were fired, they would be out eating lunch, leaving their drivers outside of the hotels. Mm-hmm. And the only mode of communication then was to tune in the radio in the car. We didn't have cell phones at the time, so there was no way of listening to the news through any other way. You had to tune in on radio. And so the driver hears the cabinet secretary who is eating out there, and I'm here roasting, having nothing for lunch, has been fired. You know what they did?
He drives off.
Turns the ignition, boom, takes the car right back to the ministry. When the minister comes out of his lunch, where's my driver? Where's your driver? Oh.
She's history.
Well, 1 o'clock news.
Very interesting.
You're gone.
You referred to Lin Jiro.
Yes.
Someone that I would call a friend, really, because, in fact, he was the president's,
personal secretary.
Personal secretary, yes. Press secretary.
Yes.
He told me, in fact, we had a phone conversation. Mm-hmm. He, in fact, worked with him for 42 years.
I doubt if anybody knows President Moi the way Lin Jiro does.
He told me, as a matter of fact, that towards the end, really, it was no longer this business of master, servant or what have you.
Yes.
He was a member of the family. Effectively, he was like a son.
Yes, yes.
And he also says that the president actually told him this business of 95, for example, that everybody is going with. This was simply the age that was reflected on his ID. But that, in fact, he was a little bit older than that. In fact, we are talking about a man who probably lived for slightly over one century.
Yes, I believe so. I believe so. I heard that during his funeral that even his personal physician, Dr. Silberstein, said the president was definitely not 95.
He that must is have the American, the American century. He's American physician.
Yes.
He's also, by the way, he was also, when I met him, the physician also of his friend, Charis Mugani Njonjo. And those two also, by the way, they were very impeccably dressed all the time. And guess where they got their suits? Savile Row in London, somewhere off Oxford Street.
Very British.
In fact, I once, you know, went there when I was doing my PhD research for UCLA. Mm-hmm. And I found, of course, I was eminently underqualified. I couldn't be, you know, really their customer. I couldn't afford.
Well, you mentioned Lee Njiro. Lee Njiro would, you know, talk to us on and off whenever we saw him. He was extremely busy. But one of the things I remember him telling me one time is how early President Moi woke up. That he also had to keep up with that kind of, you know, calendar. The president would be up so early in the morning, perhaps before 5 in the morning. And he would want his diary done. He wanted to know where we are going, what we are doing. A lot of people had a difficult time keeping up with President Moi, even in his old age. He kept a calendar. He was very disciplined about his time.
Esther, I can in fact verify that because I had a very rare opportunity to witness that because I happened at one time to be a house guest of President Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi in Kabarak.
When was
during
that?
My after vacation in 2004, after
he left.
Remember
the
when
president.
He came here and Lee called you and me to go and have tea with the president?
Because we had had an interview with him at State House Nairobi.
Correct.
And I think we were the second African journalist to be invited by Moi to talk to him one-on-one. The first person I remember doing an interview with President Moi was KTN's John Sibi Okumu. And that was really something.
I used to talk with Okumu. Nobody... He used to have this program on KTN.
Yes.
But he was also a teacher.
Yes.
There was another great important journalist in President Moi's life. Uh-huh. And that was Tido Muhando.
Of BBC.
The Tanzanian.
Yes.
Who was at the BBC.
Yeah.
And currently is with Azam Television, an affiliate in Dar es Salaam.
Yes. So, yes, he did follow up with us. I remember the State House visit, and we were shocked when we made the request. We traveled from here, from VOA, with the then-director, Sunday Anger.
The VOA FM
station
broadcaster.
In Nairobi, yes.
Which I had asked Moi to grant on behalf of the VOA. Director of VOA, Sunday Anger.
Yes, I remember.
And he politely agreed.
And it was interesting.
If we come to launch this one, you must come with Shaka so that we celebrate.
And he did grant us an interview. It was very, very easy. I couldn't believe it because he would not grant interviews when I was in Kenya. So we did have our day at State House.
And
he followed it up when he came after he retired from the presidency.
You know, David, when you talk about President Moi really having been an education president, I also had an opportunity to witness that. When I visited him during that vacation of mine in Kabarak, for example, he introduced me to a small college which grants degrees, Kabarak University. It had an Englishman who was its vice chancellor, and President Moi was the chancellor himself. He also had a very, very good school there, which is Kabarak Secondary School. And I also went to his birthplace, Baringo, where there is Sacho High School, one of the most competitive high schools in Kenya. I remember having an interaction with the students at a swimming pool in that most remote part of Kenya, at a swimming pool, and the emphasis for the curriculum was religion and science. To be honest with you, I always, of course, was less than mediocre in mathematics and science, but I can vouch for you that any of those kids could end up at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Yes, I think that's That's a really good point. Specifically in relation to, you know, what we'd mentioned earlier, in relation to how he emphasized education, but not only emphasized education, but he afforded the more marginalized groups, particularly in Rift Valley, in northeastern Kenya, in some of the more marginal areas, to access education. I think this was part of the reason the education system was changed to the 844, not only to reimagine education in Kenya, but also to provide quotas for some of the regions that had been underrepresented within the education system. And I think this really helped to bring up some of the more marginalized groups. And obviously, Esther and myself are relics of, you know, his education system. And, you know, the benefits of his education are very clear for Esther and for myself. So we really definitely embrace him and remember him fondly, particularly in that line of education, his emphasis on education and in creating a climate, an environment, you know, that would advance education, you know, within the country.
You know, talking about remote, I had, of course, the opportunity and privilege of visiting his home area. And as someone that was born and comes from the neighboring country called Uganda, I remember some remote places in Uganda. We're talking about places like Bundibujo in the western part of the country, near the legendary mountains of the moon, Mount Rwenzori. That kind of like reminds me of Bundibujo, really, where the president came from. And I think if he probably had not had the opportunity to be at the political harem of Kenya, that part of Kenya probably would not really be seen to be part of the Republic of Kenya in terms of infrastructure. We're talking about roads, communication, we're talking about schools and you name it. It's incredible.
You know, Shaka, you mentioned school and you mentioned President Moi, and some of the things we are seeing as, you know, of course, now Kenya's media is really dynamic. We didn't have that kind of, you know, press freedom and so many television and radio stations as we have now, which is very, very good. Mm. And at the time, because KBC was an institution of its own kind, as I said, it also had its command from State House, if you like, the president didn't really, wasn't very fond of the Daily Nation and other newspapers and BBC as well. And I guess even why he allowed VOA, and they wrote a story about a new kid, you know, a new media kid on FM in Nairobi, is because he was very critical of BBC also at the time, and he wanted another international media organization to be there. Remember, he came to Serena Hotel. He was the one who launched the VOA FM station when we were there with Director Sandy
Anger. I was the master of ceremony.
But I was going to take you back to a little bit about the education system and what I'm reading now about his history. Growing up, he was orphaned very early. And he had to traverse, you know, from one place to another to go to school. He had to walk miles. And remember, those are the days when young boys would also have to take cattle somewhere to go and feed and probably go by on their way to school to take them home. I think for President Moi, that was very painful as a child. And so he figured, if one day I'm able to do something, then I'm going to make education very, very important. It's going to be a priority of mine.
Correct.
Because he didn't want other people to have to go through that kind of situation. In terms of the coup, I will tell you one thing that a lot of people don't know. When it happened, the organizers of the coup went and picked up one of the most prominent broadcasters. His name was, and he's still there, Leonard Mambo Mbotela. Because he was believable, his voice was known. It was another Shaka there, you know, and so they picked him up and they told him what to say.
I have met him.
And so he would announce over and over again that the presidency of Daniel Arap Moi has been overthrown. And I was a little kid, very little, and I heard about it so early in the morning, and I told my mom, oh, the radio people are saying the government has been overthrown. She literally just spanked me and said, get out of here. Do you know what you mean by the government being overthrown? This means chaos in this country. But fast forward, because Monda talked about it, in terms of KBC, as soon as that happened, I wasn't there then, but President Moi put a number of military officials within a Voice of, Kenya to protect the broadcasters. So when I joined KBC, and I believe to date, the military, there is still a wing that has the military people. They have their guns. Every 8 p.m. in the evening, they escort everybody working in KBC. We were literally escorted. Vincent and I, we can tell you that story over and over again. We were taken home and guarded by the military. If you had to go on air in the morning, what we used to call dawn, which was 3 a.m., you had to be in KBC to prepare for the morning news of 6 a.m. The military guys and the driver of KBC would come and pick you up from home. So I do know that. I lived that life until I left KBC to come to the Voice of America.
Why was he particularly uncomfortable about interacting with journalists? I remember when we were interviewing him at State House Nairobi. I believe that was 2001.
It's very difficult to know, but I can tell you because, like I said, there wasn't that kind of freedom of media that we have now.
No, he said, for example, that he did not like the international
critical
media.
They said they were critical of him.
It was critical. It could demonize him. And I specifically asked him, could you, Mr. President, name names here. Who specifically does that to you?
What did he say?
I couldn't believe it. He said, the BBC. He said, the BBC.
Yeah.
But any particular reason, frankly, why he was very uncomfortable around the journalists? Because his biographer talks about how during his presidency, he granted a handful of interviews. And as far as I'm concerned, I interviewed him 3 times.
Yeah, but you
twice
see,
in Nairobi and once here.
But you see, Shaka, what maybe people in power don't realize is that our job is not to heap praises on anybody. Our job is to be objective. We have to report it. We have to say it like it is. Like we said, Moi had his days where he was really tough and not very good to be with. He would fire. He would also be very critical of his opponents. He crushed on journalists. He crushed on media houses. And he wasn't fond of BBC because they wrote stuff about him. And hey, look here, who is perfect? If there's something not so good about me and I'm the president, the media is going to write about it. And if I do something good, they are going to write about it. So he really picked on those who were critical of him. And when he was requested, as you said, you were instrumental in getting that request to his presidency to have Voice of America have its presence in Kenya. And he said, yes, it's about time to have a competitor for this BBC.
You know, I met one African president whose name I shall not reveal here, who actually asked me, why do I always abuse him? To be honest with you, I have never abused any newsmaker, be it a president or a very ordinary newsmaker. But I thought what he probably meant was, why do I always criticize him? And I told him very politely that unfortunately for him, unfortunately for me, my role is very simple. It is essentially to put the people who hold public office in a situation where they have to be accountable to those who voted them or who helped them to get into power. That our job really is accountability, and that what guides me are the facts. The facts and the truth.
So did he accept your narrative?
Did he I don't know that he reasoning? Did, because up to now he has never granted me another interview.
Well, keep trying.
But just in case such a very important leader was watching this program, and all the others really watching on the continent and what have you, what would you say to them that they should feel very comfortable, sincerely, because it is all about accountability?
Yeah, they have to say why they do certain things and why they don't do certain things. I don't see any problem with that. I mean, if you ask me why I like a certain meal, I'll tell you I like it because of ABCD. If I don't like it, I'll tell you why I don't like it. I think it is that simple.
Very interesting. David, we talk about a legacy, and we talk about a president here who obviously was a motto. He did some bad things, but he did a lot of great things. And especially given that in this day and age, there are a lot of African rulers out there. I call them rulers because if they were leaders, really, they should be able to find it very easy, simple, and almost natural to respect their constitutions. And when their term comes to an end, they go home and retire. But this is a man who was able to negotiate and manage his way to exiting power. What made him tick, really? What made him tick? He was able to manage his way. He was able to read about essentially what you would call peaceful. He was able to conduct peaceful transfer of power from his presidency
I never had the opportunity to meet him in person, but I think, I mean, from a regular Kenyan's view, I think one of the things that made him tick was a very natural interaction. I think he really enjoyed being with the people, one-on-one with people, being able to, you know, to be close to people and to be a charismatic and people's man. And he would, you know, dish out money to during Harambe's. Those were public fundraisers. You know, if he met, you know, students. I remember I went to Kakamega High School in Western Kenya. As Moi was passing on the road, students would go out and sing for him, take time off classes. And that day, you know, he'd give the headmaster money for us to have bread and tea with milk. So he was very much a people's man. And, you know, in your previous discussion, you had this conversation around media and around his discomfort with media. I think he was also very much concerned about the construction of his image, which is why which might explain some of his suspicion with some of the foreign media, for example, the British Broadcasting Corporation, that they might tend to construct an image of him which was not quite correct. So he was very much image-oriented, very much a people's man. But even in doing that, that then created some wider challenges about him wanting to control the narrative. And in a democratic and an open space, that can become particularly challenging. So I fondly remember him very much as a people's man.
Very interesting. Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. And on that note, our guest today were Esther Githui Ewart, my colleague, of course, and anchor, and David Onserio Monda. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Kenya. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.